God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We did that. Welcome to Anna. Is there anybody else? You can raise your blue hand or unmute yourself or wave at the camera, jump up and down.
Hi, I'm Siobhan.
I am Abby. So
we have Siobhan and Abby. First 30 days?
Yes.
Is that right? Welcome. Thank you.
I think I saw a gentleman raise his hands, but I can't find him now.
Yes, sir. My name is Robert Jackson. Currently not sober yet. I'm working on it. It's hard.
Welcome.
But
I've been coming back.
Thank you.
Welcome.
David, can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry. That was Katie. She's driving. She apologizes. Okay, so we're done with the first 30 days. Everybody cool? The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is a speaker slash ask it basket meeting. We were going to welcome Katie Parker. I'm sure we'll reschedule her. But let's do this too. There is a user called Questions, and that's actually Larry. But you can feel free if you're, you know, we've got some newcomers in here. Why don't you guys throw some, anybody, doesn't have to be a newcomer, but anybody at all. You got a question about Alcoholics Anonymous, steps, sponsorship, anything at all, throw it to the user Questions, and we'll just turn it into a traditional ask it basket meeting. We'll pull those questions and start axing people. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right.
Good. Love it.
Love you guys. Right on. So let's start off. Let's start off with Debbie D. Are you willing to start us up and tell us why'd you come here anyway?
All right. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
And don't ask me any questions. I hate asking meetings. So that's why I like to sit here listening. Anyway, there are a lot of new people here. And welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what's in the air, but I've got people calling that I haven't heard from in a while, and people want to get sober, and it's an amazing, amazing thing. And I'm just happy to be a part of it. And I was looking forward to Katie. I don't think I've ever heard her, but I'll just tell a little bit about what it was like for me and what happened and what I'm like now in a very short time. So I have never been a social drinker. I still to this day don't understand social drinking. My sobriety date is October 24th, 1982. So I've been around for a minute, and I'm one of those people that the big book talks about that they kind of raise the bottom for, because I never even got to daily drinking. But what I know from the very first time I started drinking is I drank for the effect. I wanted to get drunk. I wanted to fall down. I wanted to have scabs on my knees the next day when I woke up. And I pretty much was a blackout drinker from the get-go. And so my drinking was not pretty. It was not pretty. But it was fun for a while. You know, I thought I was having fun. I was a bartender. My husband was a beer truck driver for Budweiser. And I surrounded myself with it, you know. And And so there was a couple of things that happened that besides the obvious thing, my drinking got me to AA, but I have this thing I call my golden thread. There was a series of events that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I wasn't looking for it when I found it, but there was a judge that thought it was a good idea that I come here, and there was a lady who took me to an AA meeting. I'm not real sure why. It was kind of foggy. There was a lady I worked with that was sober for 7 years that loaned me her big book because I was a wide open drunk. I told everybody about it. And so I just had a series of events that brought me to AA. And then once I got here, I just thought, I was 27. I was too young, too smart, too pretty. And I just hadn't suffered enough yet. I didn't doubt that I was an alcoholic because I had already figured out what that doctor's opinion tells me, that once I take a drink, I'm going to take another drink. That I'm going to set off this craving in me, this allergy that we call it, that I have no control or choice over, that I'm going to continue to drink. And so anyway, just to shorten this up, I'm not a first nighter. I didn't get sober from that first AA meeting that girl took me to, or even the first ones that the judge sent me to. But what I did hear in these rooms is the truth about myself. The truth that once I quit identifying myself out and started, I compared myself out and identified with the people that were sharing in these rooms. Our stories are not all the same, but I do think that eventually you hear your story and it's like, oh, that person drank like I drank. And what I definitely think is that we all have this sickness of whatever type you want to call it, soul sickness, spiritual sickness, whatever, that beyond the not drinking is the greatest benefit to me of this program, is that my life is nothing like I ever thought it would be. Certainly not by my own doing, but I became willing to follow the suggestions of a sponsor. I became a member of a home group. I attended meetings because I wanted to attend meetings after the probation part was all over. And the promises of this program started coming true in my life. And so that's why I'm still here today. It's amazing to me to be able to give what was freely given to me, to be freely giving it away today, and to see other people's lives change. It truly is a gift of sobriety. And I don't know if I'm supposed to just shut up now or what, so I'm going to say thanks everybody for being here, and welcome to the newcomer.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks for sharing.
I got a question for Ebony. How do you find a sponsor and a home group?
Hey, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony. How do I find a sponsor and a home group? So I'll start with the sponsor part first. I'll tell you how I found a sponsor. I didn't. I decided, I kept hearing about sponsorship and the big book and all of that stuff. So I sponsored myself. And I think it's very important that I be as transparent and honest about my experience. So I decided to sponsor myself for a while. And I went to a whole lot of meetings, sponsoring myself, reading the big book by myself, and wanted to die inside the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, just not drinking. And finally, my ears and my heart opened up and realized sponsoring myself was not sponsorship. So finally I got into this miserable place where, kind of like what the previous person who talked said, I heard someone tell my story. I heard someone who drank the way I drank, but more specifically, I heard someone who felt the way I felt when I was just not drinking. They understood what it felt like to want to die. They understood what it felt like to be uncomfortable in my own skin. They understood what it felt like when I say I was rotting from the inside out, because she was telling her story. And the biggest difference was she hadn't had a drink, and she had some type of contentment and peace and serenity that just oozed off of her. And I just thought it was impossible for someone like me to get to where she was. you know, maybe it's that language of the heart, but I was really guided to this person. And I finally, being desperate enough, decided to ask her to be my sponsor. You know, so I went to meetings and I listened for people who sounded like they knew how I drank and they knew how I felt, but they were only talking about themselves. You know, and they talked about action and they talked about the steps, but they just seemed happy. And that's how I found my first sponsor. And as far as the home group, I went to a whole lot of different types of meetings, you know, and I wanted to be surrounded by people who seemed like they were doing what they said. I didn't want to be surrounded by people who just told me what to do and talked a whole lot, but then when the meeting was over or before the meeting, they were just a-holes. You know, so I found a meeting to show up to, and the people seemed like they weren't just talking the talk, but they were walking the walk. And I know it's Zoom currently, and it's a little bit different from when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, but like the meetings that were consistent, the meetings that seemed to have a solution, the meetings that were literature based so that it didn't wander off into other topics that I wasn't interested in. And I asked like, hey, how do I join this group? And they made it very simple. Put your name on this paper or give us your email address and show up here for our business meeting. It'd be a privilege to have you in this group. And it just went from there. So that's how I found my home group and my first sponsor. So thanks for letting me share, guys.
Thank you, Ebony. I see Al J from Buckingham. Or would you like to take a question, Al?
Yep, I'll take one.
All right, brother. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to be here.
We have someone who asks, are the 12 steps in the big book or the 12 and 12?
Oh, boy. I'm Al Alcoholic.
Hey, Al.
Sobriety date, May 5th, 1987. Credit everything to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first 2 years of sobriety, I went in and out of sponsoring myself. I had three therapists. I had a pile of self-help books, Hazleton guides. I looked at the 12 and 12 sum, and the big book put me asleep. And might as well have written it in Russian because I didn't know how to read it. And then something happened miraculous, that a guy gave me a set of tapes of the original Joe and Charlie, and I went to Contanning, Pennsylvania in December of 1989, and my whole life changed in a weekend. Everything about me, everything that I thought about Alcoholics Anonymous, everything that I thought about the steps. And the same person that walked into that fire hall in Contanning, Pennsylvania was not the same person that walked out Sunday morning. And what I learned from Joe and Charlie is I didn't know how to read the book because I was home trying to read it by myself. And the big book was a set of directions to bring out a spiritual awakening. And that special spiritual awakening was something that we would give away to another alcoholic through the step process. Once we had taken it, we'd be properly armed with the facts. The self-help books were given away or went in the trash can. The Hazleton guides went in the trash can. I didn't ever need to see another therapist from that date to this date. Because through the book Alcoholics Anonymous, active sponsorship and being a group, and surrounded by AA fanatics, they gave me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they gave me what the problem was and what the description of that problem was through the eyes of the big book and what the description of the solution was. It was not a definition. And the 12 and 12 is an important book also, but it reminds us in the 12 and 12 that we should start with the big book because it is the specific set of directions that I don't know how to get without other alcoholics. I don't get me without you, and my fifth step is incomplete without yours. you guys teach me how to read the big book. And I've often said, and I find it very interesting, it's a very interesting piece of literature because it seems to update itself. And if you want to hide something from an alcoholic, put it in the big book. Whoever came up with that was on to it. I don't know where it came from, but I've heard it since I've been in AA. So it was here way before I got here. And it was so true. And what Joe and Charlie said, the original Joe and Charlie, is that it is almost useless to read the big book by yourself. Now, you can gain some stuff. We're smart enough to gain some of it. Yeah, we get it. Paragraph here, a prayer there, a story here and there. But to get the oomph of the book and to see that thing materialize in your life because now you know how to read it and you can see it differently, it's an experience, you know. And it really changed my life. And I am a fan of the 12 and 12. I'm a fan of all of our literature. I think there's something in all of it. I love the 12 and 12 too. So if you're new, and I'll leave you with these thoughts. I suffer from an obsession of the mind that I can stop drinking on my own, but I cannot stay stopped, but I will try. I suffer from a physical reaction in the body called an abnormal reaction, which the doctor's opinion describes as an allergy. Once I start drinking, I can't control how much I drink. And when I'm not drinking, it's as much as a problem as when I'm drinking. I have a spiritual malady. I'm irritable, restless, and discontent, and easily dissatisfied with life. It just comes. It's a default position. I can never get too sober that I can't get drunk again, but I can get too drunk that I can't get sober again. And the absolute best place an Alcoholics Anonymous would be is in the middle of the lifeboat. And in AA, what we refer to that as is being in AA and not around AA. And when I'm in AA, full blast, the best I can do, I am in a position of being safe and protected from alcohol. I woke up free from alcohol, and I'm going to go to bed free from alcohol, but I have not been free from me. And I need you folks as much as I've ever needed you in my life. I'm telling you. Because when I stopped drinking, I got a thinking problem. And boy, do I. So thanks for calling on me. Can't think of a better place I'd rather be on Sunday night is with you. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Al. So good to see you, brother. Harmony, are you up for a question, my dear? Do I have to leave a spouse that drinks?
I'm Harmony. I'm an alcoholic. If you're new and you're answering that question, or if you're sober while asking that question, I can't answer that for you. And nobody really can. That's between you and your God. And I could tell you that the course of the steps, the third step, the fourth step, the fifth step, six, seven, eight, nine, all like, they will bring you to the point of being able to answer tough questions and go a, you know, find direction in your life, whatever the problem is. Like I have been married to an alcoholic that went out, and it was some wonderful years, and we have two kids, but it was also very, very crazy. And I struggled with that question for a handful of years. Should I stay or should I go? If anybody tells you it's black and white, like, run, because it absolutely is not. It's between me and God, and you and God, and there isn't a sponsor, a friend, an AA member that can tell you how to handle that situation. And I had to get to a place for me where I just couldn't deal with the crazy anymore. I got to the point where I was either going to, my program and my character was suffering, and I wasn't the person that God would have me be. And I had to take actions to separate and protect myself, and it wasn't about him or anybody doing something wrong. It was about me having to do what I needed to do for me. And there's a lot of people out there, like, you can stay in the relationship, you can go, like, there's all sorts of experience out there. And what you should do is work the steps, do AA, and make sure your side of the street is as clean as possible, and God will show you the way to whatever it is God wants you to do in your circumstance. And it's it basically came down to this for me: man or no man, job or no job, you know, money or no money, I do AA, and I do AA, and I keep doing AA, and I've, like, and all of those other results, they are up to God. So that's all I have to share. Thanks.
Thank you, Harmony. Larry, I got one for you. Do I have to believe in God?
I don't know what anyone else has to believe in. Here, let's turn my camera on. Sorry, I'm out of breath. He called my name and I ran back. There we go. So when I first came in the rooms, I thought I did. I thought I had to believe in God, and I thought because of that, I wasn't ever going to get sober. I'm going to catch my breath, I swear. And what I continued to do was drink. I thought that I came in as pretty much a pretty heavy, militant, arguing atheist, anti-theist. I thought the belief in a higher power was not only wrong, but dumb. It was a crutch. And, you know, I come in with, you know, imagine me thinking I am better than everyone else because I have the solution, which is I'll figure this thing out. I'll think my way out of it. I'll come into AA and I'll get their little tips, and then I'll figure it out on my own, and I won't have to do it through any spiritual means or a higher power. So for me, not only did I not want to believe in anything, I was adamantly against it, and I judged everyone else who said the word God or higher power, because to me that meant God, and God means religion, and I wasn't trying to do any of that. So I continued to drink. So for me, where's it at? I got it right here. I was in a meeting, and there was a grapevine, because I was doing the whole just go to meetings thing. And this grapevine right here, if you can see it, I keep it on my desk as it fades into Zen. Atheists and agnostics, members of AA. It's the October 2016 grapevine. And I stole it, and I took it home and I read it, and it kind of blew my mind, because it talked about people in AA who did not believe in God. And I was like, holy shit, that's a thing. And it was just a door. It cracked the door open a little bit for me that maybe there's an opportunity. So look, the way I understand it for me, doesn't really matter what I believe in. Now for me today, things change, right? Luckily the 12th step doesn't say, you know, you're going to have a spiritual awakening after step two. Luckily it didn't do that. It also didn't say you need a spiritual awakening and you need to believe in God first before you do all this stuff. Didn't say that either. What happened for me is that I took the rest of the steps and my higher power reached out to me, and things started to change, and I started to develop something, and things, you know, I wasn't able to explain things away the way I used to. And slowly but surely, over a long period of time, my old prejudice started to fall away, and I started to use the word. I used to start the serenity prayer at Grant. I never said the word God. It's saying, grant me the serenity. I never said the Lord's Prayer at the end. Now I say all those things. You know, I was beaten to a state of reasonableness where I was willing to pray to a God I didn't believe in because I was willing to do whatever it took. And before long, somewhere around the ninth step, I started to have a spiritual experience. And each one sort of compiled itself up to be a spiritual awakening finally after the result of these steps. So do you have to believe in a God? I don't know what you got to believe in, but nobody here is going to tell you what you should and should not believe in. It's just something that you can't do on your own. Maybe. Because if you can, great. Go for it, man. My hat's off to you. I know for me, I could not do it by myself. Now, I do have a higher power today, which I choose to use the word God. But some people, good orderly direction, group of drunks, AA itself, whatever. It just ain't you. And it ain't me, because I certainly can't be your higher power either. All right, that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share. I caught my breath. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Amy Kay, you out there?
I'm here.
What is a message of depth and weight?
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Hey, Amy.
I spent a long time, and I may be particularly hard-headed, but I would say that I managed to hang on for 10 years in the rooms, very sick, waiting to become spiritual by osmosis. And what I was hearing was, go to meetings, don't drink, come early, stay late, socialize, fellowship, 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was still miserable. I was miserable. I hated everyone. I hated myself. What I did not understand for a very long time was that alcohol was not my problem. If alcohol had been the problem, no alcohol would have been a solution. And I was sitting in meetings talking, listening to people talking about how back when I was drinking, I was such a liar and a thief and a cheat. And I'm more than 10 years sober and I'm still lying. I'm still cheating. I'm still stealing. I've gone from a drunken horse thief to a sober horse thief, and I just can't stand myself. And I really believe that I must have been one of the summers sicker than others. And it was because it never got through to me that if I am a real alcoholic, taking away alcohol, which has been the only solution I have ever had to what it feels like to be me on the inside, to what it feels like to face life on life's terms. If I do not get a sufficient substitute for that alcohol, things are going to get worse and worse and worse for me. And I don't know what I was paying attention to. I mean, I was paying attention to 90 meetings in 90 days, but I spent years going to one meeting a day, two meetings a day, sometimes three meetings a day. And, I think that I felt like I was in the popular kids club. I was hanging out. I was showing up. I was doing everything. And I don't know. I somehow had a mental twist that Alcoholics Anonymous was like, some kind of shit show of self-improvement. And this is not a self-help program. This is a God help program. And when I understood in step one that I am going to be powerless forever. My life is always going to be unmanageable if I am the one managing it. That I do not work the steps to get the power to say no to alcohol. I work the steps to clear away what blocks me from a power greater than myself. The message of depth and weight is lack of power is my dilemma. The message of depth and weight is my problems are of my own making. The message of depth and weight is selfishness, self-centeredness. This is the root of my problem. Alcohol was a symptom. I spent a long time thinking alcohol was a problem. That's the message of depth and weight. Get to God. Here's a way to do it. Thanks.
Bobby, can you drive and do less than 5 minutes?
Probably not.
Hey Bobby, how do I know if I'm an alcoholic? How can I be sure I'm an alcoholic?
I'm Bobby Betancourt. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey Bobby.
Well, I had some trouble distinguishing whether or not I was an alcoholic. The first thing that kind of caught me up is I was in an AA meeting. at a treatment facility that required me to go to AA meetings. It also required me to take alcohol swab test and go to a therapist to talk about my drinking as well. That was very curious. That was very confusing to most people because they were very concerned about my drinking. And I was confused as to why people continued to ask me about my drinking. I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. That's a good sign. It's probably the main sign if you're asking a question about whether or not you're an alcoholic. Because I tried many different ways to quit drinking and moderate, and I found that I couldn't. I came into AA believing I was not an alcoholic, and I really like what Amy just shared about the message of depth and weight. I heard people talking about this spiritual sickness and having a sponsor and taking steps, and God, and home group, and fellowship, and all those things. And what I figured out was that you were all losers, and I was not like you, and so I didn't need your help. Because I, once again, wasn't an alcoholic. What I found was is that I became suicidal at that time. That was just my experience. I was very angry. I became extremely depressed. I was volatile. And I was not drinking. And I became suicidal. For me, the craziest thing occurred is that I had this idea that I thought was my idea. That I was going to drink again, and that would probably make me feel better. For some reason, I just kind of intuitively knew that's what I needed to do. Either that or blow my brains out. And funny story, I never wanted to go back to AA, believing I was not an alcoholic. Maybe I just had a bad run-in and had some bad luck. You know, people who DT when they're 17 and, you know, drink a fifth of vodka and other substances to help them drink more on a daily basis. You know, you can quit that stuff cold turkey and everything will be fine. So I took that drink, and then 3 years later, I burned my life to the ground. I was unemployable. I was under investigation by the NCIS. I had a career opportunity in the military at a very young age, and everything was going very well there. And then it suddenly turned very bad. I was disowned by my family. I was basically going to be homeless, and I wound up in AA again. This very strange thing happened. I wound up in AA again, and that wasn't even my fault. I was going to a treatment facility, which the Navy paid for, and I asked if I was going to be paid while I was in this treatment facility, still not really convinced that I was an alcoholic, and they said yes, and I went into this treatment facility, for the second or third time right before I had tried to kill myself. And I heard something for the first time that I hadn't heard before. And what I heard was is that, and I was 20 years old I turned 20 in my second treatment facility. And I heard that I didn't have to be a bum. I heard that I never have to live under a bridge. I heard that I never had to run over anybody, commit manslaughter, be in the penitentiary, drink some prison-made wine, you know, any of this stuff, lose a Fortune 500 company. And none of that stuff was happening to me in my life either. And so I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, not really convinced, once again, not knowing that I was an alcoholic, believing that was the problem. And I heard someone else describe to me what it was like to be sober and what it was like to be drunk. And it sounded a little something like this. He said to me if I had ever read the big book. And I said, yeah, I've been in AA. And he said, no, have you ever read the big book? I said, no. He said, well, then you've been around AA. Have you ever heard of restless, irritable, and discontent? And I said, I mean, I've heard you talk about it in the meetings. I don't know what it actually means. He said, well, I'll tell you what it's like for me. He said, when I am sober, I'm convinced that no one really appreciates me. I should be the boss of this job that I've fucking hate and I've been there for a week. I should own that place and I quit and I go to this next place and I get lots of other things to replace this, like hobbies. When I get somewhere, that's not the right place. It's not really where I want it to be. When I get something that I really want, I treat it like garbage and I throw it away. I never finish it and I move on to the next thing. That doesn't satisfy me. And I do that most of the time and I'm pretty much an unpleasant individual, meaning irritable. And he said, does that sound familiar? He said, yes, that sounds very familiar. And then he also told me about step one. And part of step one was that I was powerless over drinking. And Amy had mentioned that, you know, once I begin to drink, I lose control. It's just the first one that sets off an allergy that I don't know that I even have. And this leads me to doing some pretty crazy and insane shit over and over again. And sacrificing a lot of things that are important to me. And he told me step one was basically my life sucks when I'm drinking and it eventually sucks when I'm sober. And I don't know what happened other than me being absolutely desperate. But that kind of spelled it out for me about me being an alcoholic. I just heard something that sounded like these people knew what I was suffering from. And I had never in my entire life met people or knew people that had understood me. And they also invited me to read the book, get a sponsor, and offered me sponsorship and explained to me that my problem really is spiritual. And that really resonated with me because I treated people like shit. I knew that when I came here in some strange way. And that really was how I figured out I was an alcoholic. I just drank again, ruined some shit, became suicidal again. And I figured out through the big book and through someone else explaining to me what the definition of an alcoholic is, that I was one. And I didn't really have to complicate it. And I didn't have to look too much further and think much more about that. And thank God, you know, the book tells me if you're wondering, you know, take a drink. You might have some strange reaction to that. And I was also told when I came here, do you really need to take another drink to figure that out? Or have you taken enough? And thankfully, I had some really strong people help me out and support me and walk me through this process and make every bit of it palatable to me and help me understand what it meant because I couldn't understand it on my own. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Bobby. Lynn, may I ask you a question, dear? You're going to have to unmute yourself. I'm going to combine two questions. One of them is, what are the bedevilments and what is a sober bottom?
Oh, wow. Hey, I'm Lynn and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here. You know, the bedevilments is just something we just read about in the Nooners meeting today. So that's like fresh on my brain. And actually my big book's right in front of me right here. So I know the answer to that one. It is a really powerful paragraph. It talks about we're having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We are prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy, and we couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That's the bedevilments. And in a nutshell, I mean, that's what it's like when I used to think that described me before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, but it described me after I got alcohol out of my system too. So it's kind of like it does overlap with the sober bottom part of it. But basically, you know, I am very, very selfish and self-centered, which doesn't mean that I think very well of myself or think very highly of myself. It just thinks that I think only of myself. And so when I'm starting to participate in this self-centered fear that I nut up and get into sober, you know, I can just drive myself crazy. It just goes round and round and round and round. And I start trying to solve problems with my thinking. And I have learned throughout the years of being in sobriety, in sober in AA, is that, you know, I just can't fix my thinking with my thinking. I've got to take some sort of action. I got to do some sort of thing. I've got to get, and most of the time it's pretty easy to find a newcomer, to call and check on a newcomer, call and check on an old timer, you know, just do take some sort of action to get out of myself. So that I can get it, so I can allow God to get in there and, you know, come up with some sort of solution. You know, when I'm really, really spun up and I'm really, really into non-sober thinking, it's very hard for me to concentrate on prayer. You know, sometimes I can do it, sometimes I can't. You know, sometimes I can, you know, just ask God to remove everything and then I feel calm and then I'm in a Zen place. But that's pretty rare. When I'm really, really spun up in sobriety, like earlier today, you know, my mom has dementia and I love my mom dearly and I consider it a real privilege to be responsible for her care. But, you know, she doesn't have any cognitive thinking. And she kept trying to explain something to me that requires cognitive reasoning. And I just kept saying, you know what, Mom, it's just not necessary to concentrate on that right now. And she just kept, you know, and it just kept, you know, she kept escalating and escalating. And then she kept getting overexcited and disconnecting us. And so I had to keep calling her back. And she kept hanging up on me. And I'm getting frustrated. And she's getting frustrated. But she thinks I'm hanging up on her. And I'm not hanging up on her. I'm just like, I'm trying to get out of the box. And the thing is that finally, the last time that I called her back, I just took a deep breath in between. I just said, you know what, God, you just got this. Or just give me the words, whatever. And then I just called her up and just said, Mom, I love you. I think we're about done with our conversation tonight. If I can catch you again tomorrow, would that be good? And she was like, oh, okay, honey. I don't know where that came from. I mean, I don't know why it was so hard for me to get there, but we finally got there. And I was just really, really frustrated, but I was about ready to make it into this really, really huge issue. And it was gonna send me into tears. And then I was just like, I can't do this, blah, 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 blah. Nobody can do this. Nothing in life has prepared me for sitting around in a pandemic while I can't go visit my mom with dementia when I'm actually her best resource for memory. You know, nothing in life has prepared me for this. Nothing in life ever prepared me to come into Alcoholics Anonymous and completely rearrange my thinking when I'm in my late 30s. You know, I mean, all of this is that's about hitting my sober bottom. And so, you know, the way that we get, you know, the very opposite of what the bedevilments are is what I like, what Bill talks about in his story. He talks about it in two places in the big book, but he talks about once in his story, he talks about being rocketed into the fourth dimension. And it's not about like, I'm just going to rise above and I'm going to be Zen and all of the world is going to be great. It's not about changing what my circumstances are. It's about knowing what happiness, usefulness, and peace are. And you know, and the biggest thing for me today is that, you know, by being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can always be useful. And in the beginning, that used to be, you know what, can I wash the ashtrays or can I make coffee? And can I greet people, whatever it is that I can do. And sometimes, you know, and then in later years, as I've stayed sober longer and longer, I had the privilege of being able to take women through the steps and being able to sponsor them. And I've seen, you know, been a part of women's spiritual experiences and I've had them be part of my spiritual experiences. And that's the opposite of the devilment. So I don't know if I answered that second part correctly, but thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Lynn. Leslie, I see you. You want a question? somebody in the room is asking, are you people really doing all of this stuff?
No, our mouths are moving. We're all lying. I'm Leslie. I'm an alcoholic. And I've been known to do all that smack they're talking about. And the best part is I don't have to do it perfect. And for me, the grace of Alcoholics Anonymous is, like, I've taken all these steps, and something happens in me, and it just starts to work. Like, I don't have to try so hard anymore to, like, bite my tongue or to not hurt your feelings or to, like, I just stop thinking I'm the biggest piece of shit every day. And that's, like, Alcoholics Anonymous working on me. And I did all the stuff that people are talking about when I was new. Like, I got a home group, and I remember the day I did it the first time. I was at the noon meeting, and I felt there was pressure because everybody kept looking at me talking about a home group. So I just signed my name on a piece of paper that was hanging up at that meeting. And then I told my sponsor about it, and I could tell she didn't like that. So the next day, I went and erased it, and I joined her home group. So that's how I got my first home group, you know? And, like, I got a sponsor, the one I've had the longest, because I heard her sharing in a meeting that she got in a bar fight one night at 11 years sober, and I was like, that's who I need, you know? Let's see, what else have we talked about? I've taken the steps. I've read the book. I've read the book with other people. The worst thing I ever did was read the book by myself because I can't barely read, can't barely talk either. So it was really great that somebody finally took me through the book, and she took time out of her life to just show me and, like, teach me about this because it helped save her, you know? And I remember I was just, like, blown away by that. And, like, somebody told me a couple years ago, like, I have the same 5 stories, and I really do, because they were, like, game changers, you know? And it's all, like, I've had 3 different sponsors, and they've been 3 completely different things, but it's exactly what I needed in those times. And I don't know, Alcoholics Anonymous is just the reason I'm still here today. You know, like, this is what I look forward to. You know, this is my favorite meeting of the week, and I'm finally back in Virginia Beach, and I haven't been here in 6 weeks. I might be making that number up, but it feels like 6 weeks. And I feel right at home, and I feel like I never left, you know? And I know I'm in a Zoom meeting. I can do this shit anywhere. But, like, I don't know about you guys, but when I first came to AA and before I got here, like, I didn't feel connected to anything in my entire life, my family, my cat, my lovers, or hostages, as some people will call them, you know, like, I didn't feel connected to anything or anybody in this universe until I got to AA, because doing the stuff that everybody has talked about, that is what gave me the ability to look myself into the mirror, to take a deep breath, and just hold on, and, like, be okay, and become the human that I am, and I can't believe that it worked. I can't believe I started doing this crazy ass shit everybody's in here talking about. Like, I was like, all right, I'll try, you know, or I'll just do it reluctantly, or, like, I'll do it to prove you wrong. I did that a lot, actually. That's what saved me a lot. Well, I'm going to do it just to prove them wrong, you know, but it saved me. And, like, AA, I don't know, like, if you don't believe it, that's fine. I was like that. I bet we've all been like that. And you know what? Still to this day, sometimes I feel like I'm not good enough or I don't deserve this. But I had a sponsor tell me a long time ago, like, why not? Why don't you deserve this? And I believe that now. Like, I'm okay with that human that I am. And it's because of AA. And because I did all the crazy stuff that everybody's talking about, you know, like, I'm able to show up. I'm able to, like, look myself in the eye, like, I can lose 2 jobs, and it's the same job, in a year and a half, you know, and not have to drink over it. And I don't know. I can go anywhere, and I can do anything. And, like, the best thing for me is, like, I get to take you guys with me. But more importantly, the God that everybody's talking about, that higher power, that's really been the best thing that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what suits up and shows up before I even get there. You know, like, that's the message, and, like, that's the thing that has helped me change. And I don't know, I'm just rambling, because, like, we do all of this, you know, we don't do it perfect, and the people that are the real winners to me are the people that are 11 years sober telling on themselves that they got in a bar fight. Like, that's the honesty that I need, you know. That's what keeps me here, and that's what I search for, you know. And I am grateful for those people that tell me the truth, that, like, the kind that, like, hurts my soul, because that's what helps me change, you know. Like, I am connected today. I was not connected when I got here, and I am connected where I'm just a big fat crybaby. Like, that's what my sober sister joked me about all the time, but I have so many damn feelings, and you know what? It's okay. Like, I'm not ashamed of them today. Like, and it's okay. Like, everything is okay, and I know that I'm taken care of no matter what happens, you know? So, we do all of this, and... And it's awesome. And I'm not perfect. You know, I don't have a home group now, and I'm sure I'm going to hear about it tomorrow just because I brought it up tonight, you know, but I need that in my life. And, you know, you guys still hold my hand, even though I'm not perfect, and I'm grateful for all of that. So thank y'all for being in this meeting tonight and helping me stay sober.
Thank you, Leslie. Tom A. from Virginia. You out there, bud? Can I ask you a question?
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I'll do the best I can.
Okay. Is relapse part of recovery, Tom?
It wasn't for me. I was a one-chip wonder. So I don't know if I can really answer that. I don't think it has to be, because it wasn't for me. You know, if you're not finished drinking, you're just not finished drinking. Or your sobriety lost its priority. And if it's not sobriety is not important enough to you, then you'll probably drink again. Or if you're not willing to follow the directions of the program, you will probably drink again. But you don't have to. As that option is always there. A sponsor would share with me, if you don't think you've had enough to drink, try some controlled drinking. Go up there and belly up to the bar, and he wouldn't say have a couple and suddenly stop. He would say just go ahead and get your belly full as you can get and see how it works out. Let me know. And but no, I don't think we have to relapse, but we need to be finished before we take a serious look at ourselves and work the steps. And that's about all I have on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. Leanne, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
How important are prayer and meditation?
Real important nowadays. It's been important all through my sobriety. It's one of the first things besides going to a meeting and calling a sponsor. That I did, as you know, was suggested, and today it really is my lifeline. I get up early, like 5:30, and I work 2 days a week now, but I still get up at 5:30 even on days I don't work, because that quiet time is so important for me to have. And I read a little bit, I pray, I meditate, I guess is what you call it. I mean, I can sit still today. And I couldn't do that except when I was in a meeting when I first got sober. And that was the one place where I felt safe for 1 hour. And today, most days, I can feel safe pretty much throughout my day. I mean, not that I don't get into fear. I do. But that's changed for me, where I found a peace that I didn't have when I first came in. And it's only through taking the suggestions. It's that action. My prayers were always like a list for Santa Claus, or you know, you do this, God, and I'm going to do this. And I never followed through with that. Those moral convictions and all that kind of stuff, I couldn't live up to what I knew was right. And you know, I was given simple directions. My sponsor gave me a couple of prayers that were in the big book to read in the morning. I had not gotten to step, she would say step three prayer, because she knew I needed something tangible that I could read and say. And then I wasn't sober very long where she had me start with step seven prayer. And even today now with people that have come in the program, you know, I'll suggest to read page 86 through 88. Because for me, I really needed that tangible, something that I could see and really taking some direction. And today, that prayer throughout the day, you know, whether I'm at work or whether I'm at home getting ready to cook dinner and the husband says something that, you know, needs something and I'm in the middle of something else, where I can pause today most of the time, not always. But it's a development that I really had to practice. It did not come, you know, just the snap of a finger. That relationship with a higher power, it's something that I've really had to work at. It's like any type of friendship, you know. And I sucked at that before I came to AA, like with my friends, you know, calling to see how they were doing, or one plan I'd make and then I'd cancel it to go do this other one, which I thought was more fun, you know. And it's the same thing with prayer for me today. You know, I can't say, oh, I need to go early to work and I'm going to pray later. You know, I've got to make that time for that, to develop that relationship. So it is definitely a priority today in my sobriety. And if you're new, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just remember being terrified there at the beginning, because I didn't know what this was all about and what was going to happen, what I was supposed to do. And those women just circled around me at my very first meeting. And, you know, here's our phone number. Here's a big book. Go home, start reading it. Call us. Come back to another meeting. And I just held on to it as if they were my life preserver. And I'm grateful to be here tonight. Thanks.
Thanks, Leanne. BJ, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
We've got a couple of questions about the fourth step. I'm just going to throw them kind of both out there and get your experience. One of them is, am I going to drink if I don't do a fourth step? And the other one is, what is this fourth column in the fourth step? What's that all about?
My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic. BJ. And I don't know if you will drink if you don't do a fourth step. I know for me, it's been an integral part of my recovery. And particularly the fifth step, because, you know, the fourth step is about me getting honest with myself, and the fifth step is about me getting honest with somebody else. And so I don't know, for AA is definitely not about therapy, but that being said, step four was such a healing process for me. And, you know, when I was new, kind of like Leanne just shared, my sponsor right off the bat had me calling her every day. And when I got to AA, I was so miserable and drinking myself to death and desperate that I was willing to go to any lengths for sobriety. So I did. I proceeded to call her every day. And what happened with that was I got in the habit of talking to somebody every day and getting honest with them about what I'm thinking and feeling. And what that looked like was, you know, I'd typically call her after work and she'd say, you know, how was your day? And I'd say, oh, it was good, except for my supervisor said this and it ticked me off. And then I went to my other coworkers and we bashed her behind her back and all this stuff. And you know, it was teaching me how to really start to notice the things that were within me that kept putting a drink in my hand. And when we, after we worked steps 1, 2, 3 and read through all those in the book and got to step 4, we read it out of the big book and did it exactly like it's described on, unfortunately, I don't know the page, but somebody does. And there's literally like a written fourth step in the big book with examples. And, you know, my sponsor had me do a couple, and we, just like in the big book, we started with people. I made a list of everybody I was resentful at, and it says in the big book, we went back through our life. So I started at present day, and I went back to my earliest memory of, you know, a little girl who was being bullied in elementary school. And I wrote down the names of the people. And in the second column, I wrote down what they had done to me. And my sponsor instructed me to use as few words as possible, because it wasn't about me being a lawyer and arguing my case and trying to convince you why I had the right to be resentful. It was, we're on a life or death errand here. So step column 2, put the harm that I felt was done to me. Column 3, what was interfered with? You know, was it my security? Do I feel like I'm not getting something I need or deserve? Was it my pocketbook? Am I not getting money? You know, and there's a whole list of stuff. And then to answer the second part of the question, in the fourth column, I got to see where I was wrong in the resentment, which sounds probably on first glance looks like kind of a almost a self-punishment thing, but it really wasn't. There's so much freedom for me then and now in knowing I have some control over this. Like, you know, it does involve me inviting a higher power in and asking for these things to be removed. But I mean, just to give you an example, with that same example I listed with my supervisor, let's say my supervisor scolded me in front of a group of people. It interfered with my pride. You know, I'm worried about how I look. And my part in that is I want her to be different than she is. I'm playing God, you know, and I'm afraid that I'm not going to get something I deserve, or that I'm getting something that I don't deserve. And, you know, I can then say that out loud and move on with the steps and go into 6 and 7 and say, God, you know, if it's your will, take this away from me so that I can be useful and happy. Because honestly, like, there is a line in the family afterward that says, we're pretty sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And this is part of my formula for that. Like, if I'm going to be useful, I need to be clear of all this stuff. And I don't know, this was also something that for me, it was helpful to do quickly, because once I do step 4, I heard somebody make the analogy one time, it's like digging up a graveyard and scattering the bones everywhere. And the rest of the steps is to clean all that up so that we can move forward and be happy and useful. And I found that to be the case. I mean, this program is a design for living. There's literally nothing that I found that I can't walk through in AA. It's just, there's an answer for everything. And I'm so grateful for this program. It's saved my life multiple times. And really enjoying this meeting. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks, PJ. All right, I'm going to throw a jump ball out here. Anybody who wants it, feel strongly about it, grab it and do it. But somebody asks, can you be recovered, or are you always recovering?
Everybody's scared.
I ain't afraid. My name is Tom Andrews. I'm an alcoholic.
Aye.
I ain't afraid of no ghost. I say both. We're always recovering from a hopeless state of mind. But when we work the steps and develop, for me, I had to develop a relationship with my higher power and get my sanity back and live sanely. So I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind, but I'm still crazy. And I still need to do the work to maintain what I have. Today it's maintenance. And when I get spun up, which I think all of us do, I know I do, I need a way to get unwrapped around the axle. And the program, the 12 steps work great. Sponsors and the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous can help me get myself straightened out. So, yes, I believe we recover from the disease. We're not cured, but we have a way out. That started to be the name of the book instead of Alcoholics Anonymous, The Way Out. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, I've got one question left. Before I do that, I'm just going to throw out a burning desire. Anybody, I know we had several new people in here. Does anybody just want to ask a question or throw something out so they don't leave with a question? All right. The last question that I have submitted is, how important is working with others? And I'm going to do a couple of minutes on that, but then I'm going to leave some space there for others to also chime in on that, if that's okay. Working with others is everything to me. I'm kind of a loner by nature. Although I love people, I'm energized in a crowd and all that kind of stuff. But I really want to figure things out, do it all by myself, figure it out, just get like the gist of it is all I'm ever looking for. You know, like if I ask a question, could you just give me the gist of it? Yeah. And as long as I get the gist of it, my mind tells me that's good enough. And I came in here into Alcoholics Anonymous with that mentality. I was willing to concede to my innermost self that I had a problem with alcohol. I was not attracted to the solution that you guys offered in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that my disbelief in God was going to disqualify me. But I didn't even have the problem right. You know, I mean, I didn't even know what it really meant to be an alcoholic, that basically left to my own devices, I am going to drink again. That's it. That's the whole thing. I'm not only powerless over alcohol after I start drinking, I'm powerless to manage the decision to not drink. I make up my mind to not drink, and everything in me could pull that off for, you know, a short period of time. And so I ended up, you know, call it a sober bottom. Somebody was talking about that earlier or whatever, but I was 6 months abstinent of alcohol when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for what I hope to be the last time. And I was absolutely suicidal, dry as a bone, and coming out of my skin, coming absolutely unglued. I don't have as much of a drinking problem as I have a terribly uncomfortable sober problem. And so I came here, and you guys did what you do. You welcomed me. You made me feel comfortable. You invited me. You let me talk. All the nonsense that was going on in my head, you listened to me, you know, and it was, whenever somebody talks about sponsorship, I always think about the men who led me along in this thing. My very first sponsor interrupted me in the middle of a rap. I don't know what I was talking about, but it was very important to me, and it was very important that he understand it, you know. And he says, David, he says, you know what a yeah but is? I was like, a yeah but? Is that some sort of Navy term, you know? And he goes, it's a little fuzzy creature. It's about this big. It's got one leg shorter than the other one. Goes around in circles going, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. Never gets a thing accomplished. And I swear to you, I thought, why is this guy telling me this? But I'm the yeah, but guy. Like, no matter what you're telling me, man, I'm just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But here's my idea, you know? And you guys just kept working with me and kept working with me. And without you, there really would be no me. I could not have gotten sober without you. I could not have stayed sober without you. And then eventually we do this thing. We do all this stuff. Like Leslie was talking about, we start doing all this stuff and running our mouths at meetings and having experiences and stuff. And then somebody walks up to you and goes, "Hey man, will you help me?" And it's like, I swore a blood oath to help you. And yes, I will. And it was very common in the AA that I came into that said, you can't keep it unless you give it away. I mean, that was just common knowledge. And I got a friend of mine who says, "I don't think you can get it until you try to give it away." And it's trying to help others that has really made this thing blossom and grow in my own life and changed me from the inside. Because now when my phone rings, I have to pick it up. I got to talk. I got to try. I got to come up with some experience to share with what you're going through. And we were talking about it today at the Nooner, man. If I'm working with five or six people and talking every day, I'm telling on myself all day long. I'm living transparently because I got to be there for the next guy. So as much as I wanted this to be a check the boxes, move on, graduate, did that, got the T-shirt, AA's under my belt. Now I can go do some other interesting things to me. I can't do this thing without you. And the beautiful part about that is I no longer want to do this thing without you. I really love you guys. And it's a joy to be with you. And I'm very pleased with the results of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll never live long enough to pay back AA for everything that's come my way. So that was that. Anybody else want to talk about working with others? Anybody have another angle on that?
Shannon, I'm an alcoholic.
Go, Shannon.
So working with others never really quite looks like what I always expected it to look like. You know, when I first got sober, you know, we read Working with Others and I heard about Working with Others, I was always thinking it was like some sponsor figure to come like swoop in and save the day. Like I thought I had to be a hero. And not that that ever worked out. I mean, like a 19, 20 year old sponsor wasn't like in super high demand, you know? And, you know, I was constantly questioning, like, am I capable of helping other people? Like, what do I do if somebody even asks me to help them? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just here and I did the steps and now I'm confused and I'm scared. And you know, when it came down to it, it was just tell my story. Tell my story. It literally says it a million times in the big book. Like, we are helped by other people telling us what they did. That's what the whole big book is. Is they're like, here's what we did and we're still sober. You should give it a shot. And, you know, I was very, very resistant to AA when I got here. And, you know, had it not been for people who were properly armed with the facts about themselves, I probably would have never bought into it. You know, because what it took for me, like we were talking about the message of depth and weight earlier, as opposed to, you know, the frothy emotional appeal, because my entire adolescence, all anybody ever said to me was like, "You're so smart, you have so much potential, and you're throwing it all away, and like, you're making your parents so upset, and like, all the I did not care. I didn't care, and even when I did care, that wasn't enough to keep me from taking a drink. So I needed somebody to tell me, this is how I feel on a daily basis with no alcohol and no higher power, and here's how I feel, you know, with a higher power and no alcohol." And I didn't believe any of it when I got here, and I did the steps thinking they weren't going to work, which is kind of the great thing about AA is you don't have to believe it's going to work. It'll still work. I think that's a pretty sweet deal. But, you know, me working with others, me being useful in this program does not mean that I'm going to go out and get the whole entire world sober. And that was something that I really needed to understand. You know, because I've had people ask me to be their sponsor. I've never gotten all the way through the steps with anybody. Matter of fact, I've never even gotten past step 5 with somebody. We've always gotten through 4 and then they disappear. And it's like, you know, people tell me all the time, like, that has nothing to do with you.
But of course, everything's about me, to me, which is another big part of why I need to work with others. And, you know, it's another thing it says in the big book is, okay, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's pretty much talking about when you're starting to go nuts, you need to tell another alcoholic immediately and then turn your attention to somebody who needs anything. Look at how you can be of service. And, you know, when I first got sober, I was opening my home group every week. You know, because I was going to TCC and Friday was my only day off from work and I could do it. So I would leave school, come home, get changed, go to the meeting, make the coffee, set up the snacks. And, you know, it never occurred to me like, oh, that's service. That's working with others. And it's come to me in the weirdest ways. You know, I remember the PI committee reached out to me one time and had me go speak for like this conference of guidance counselors in the Virginia Beach public school system, you know, just to give them information about AA, kind of tell my story, but like leave out the gnarly parts, like just the clean cut family friendly version of my story, which was difficult. But it was just to go there and carry the message of saying there is a solution. And, you know, to tell them if I was in high school and I thought there is a way that I cannot want to drink, then maybe I would have been a little more open, you know, but I mean, who knows? I can't make that kind of judgment, but my job was to go there and give them the information I had about myself and the information I had about AA. And it was so bizarre because, like, first of all, my sixth grade science teacher was there and my middle school guidance counselor, which was like humiliating, but I had so many people come up to me after and be like, you know, my uncle's in AA and, you know, he's doing really good now, or I grew up in Al-Anon and it's so cool to hear you talk about this. I think it's something we need to do. So to know that literally all I have to do to be useful is show up somewhere and open my mouth about the topic at hand, not just open my mouth because you never know what's going to happen when I do that, but open my mouth about the topic at hand and just stick to what I know and not try to speculate, not try to, you know, give you my opinion about AA. I have opinions about everything, but my opinion is not going to get anybody sober. It's not going to keep me sober for sure. You know, I just need to know how to get ease and comfort from AA because I can no longer drink for ease and comfort. You know, and my only job is to pass along that information. And I wouldn't be sober if other people weren't doing that. So who am I to show up, you know, take all the goodies and run? And it's a privilege, honestly, more so than a chore, to be useful in AA. Because if I'm here and I'm not being useful, I'm going to get bored and I'm going to bail and I'm going to drink and it's going to be a nightmare. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Shannon. I'll offer last call. We got a couple minutes if anybody wants it. Otherwise, I will close the meeting. All right. For those of you who did stick around, somebody chatted, thank you for going through with this meeting. I needed to hear every single word of today's shares. So thank you all for sharing. Let's do the seventh tradition. Boom. There's the PayPal link. Seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA?
Hey y'all, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hello, Ebony.
Wakefield Campfire Conference is not happening this year. The Wakefield Campfire Conference has been canceled for the year 2020. Also, August 28th, next Friday, District 14 with Candlelight is hosting a workshop starting at 8 p.m. It is Bill W. Spiritual Experience from 1955 to 70. JS from LA will be giving us a workshop. He's speaking for 30 minutes, and then they're going to open it up for question and answers. It's an awesome time. August 28th, 8 p.m., Candlelight. The information's on tidewaterintergroup.org. Thanks.
Thank you, Ebony. Anybody else? All right, the Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be available right here, after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, you could send an email to info@simpleactions.net. So let's see. Thanks for everybody for participating. And we don't have to thank anybody, but I'm going to throw the last couple of paragraphs on page 164, share screen, and ask for a volunteer to read a vision for you.
I got it.
Thank you, Lynn.
I'm Lynn again, and this is a vision for you from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. Shall we virtually circle up and close with the Lord's Prayer, please? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.